Hi, I'm Jodie Walmsley, author, keynote speaker, and happiness expert. I'm talking to you today from the Simply Laughter Online Summit. My next guest is James Taylor. Now, James is the host of many online summits, and he is the person who inspired me to have this summit. He's going to be talking to us on creativity, which is his main topic, and he's going to show us why it's so important to be creative, how to become more creative, and how actually embracing AI with creativity is so important to you today. Enjoy. Hi, James. How are you doing?
Very well. Lovely speaking to you today.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I'm used to watching you interviewing everybody, so it's quite fun for me now to interview you.
It's your first friend.
Yes, it is. And it's funny because you are actually one of the reasons that I decided to start doing Summit. So thank you for that.
My pleasure. And it's great because I think these summits, they're so much fun to do. They're a lot of work, as I'm sure you know as well. But they just give so much value to the viewer, to the listener, and they're a huge amount of fun putting them together.
They are. You learn so much, and one of the things that I'm learning from you is all about creativity.
Yeah, this is what I'm kind of known for now. Apart from doing all these summits and different things, my main job is I get booked as a keynote speaker around the world to speak about creativity and work with companies on creativity, and also I create a lot of content to help individuals with their creativity as well. So it's a subject I'm just absolutely kind of fascinated by.
That's great. And what actually got you started with the whole creativity story?
Well, originally when I first left school, I was a professional jazz drummer. I've always been interested in kind of improvisation and ideas and things like that. And then I very quickly moved into the business side. So I managed many successful music artists and did that for many years, platinum selling artists and Grammy award winners. And the thing I was always really fascinated by was when I was talking to them and having conversations, or we were backstage, these were like really well-known and very successful creatives, but they had the same fears as everyone else. You know, am I too old to be doing this now? Am I too young to, someone's already done it, but better. I can only release this when it's 100% perfect. All these fears that any creative person has. And the thing that I always felt was that whenever I was talking to someone who didn't necessarily consider themselves creative, they had this completely different kind of wrong concept about what a creative person is and kind of how these creative people functioned. So I kind of wanted to kind of break down some of those barriers and just have more people realize that creativity is something that all of us are born with. It's an inherent part of who we are as human beings, but you actually have to do some work in order to really fully realize that potential that you have inside of you.
Yeah, well, that's great. And then, who is a creative, or is there such a thing?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting one because if we kind of go way back, the idea of, we often think about this idea of creative genius. That's you often hear this kind of thing of creative genius. It sounds like a really heavy, big word, but if you go back to ancient Greeks and the Romans, they believed that we were essentially vessels for creative genius. Genius flowed through us. And that genius may come from the people around us, the environment around us. It may come from, if you believe in spirit, from a spirituality, from a god. It may come from what's called the genius loci, that places themselves can have their own genius and they can flow through you. Now, the good thing about that is if your creative project doesn't work out, if you believe that, then it's not all your fault, because things is complicated and you're taking all these influences from other places. But if something does work out and you believe that, then you can't take all of the credit. So that's the way that we felt about creativity for hundreds, thousands of years. And then around the Renaissance time, a gentleman called Giorgio Vasari came along and he wrote a book called The Lives of the Artists about Michelangelo and Da Vinci. And he said, no, we've got it all wrong. It's the individual that is the creative genius. Michelangelo is the genius. Da Vinci is the genius. Now, the problem with that is, on one sense, it means that whenever someone, if you believe that, that is the individual that is the genius, then when you have a project that's very successful, that works, you can say, it's all me. I am the creative genius. And you can, it's very ego-driven in that sense. But if you have a project that doesn't work out, that can also be very crushing to you because you feel that it's all my fault that this thing didn't work out. Now, one of the things that Giorgio Vasari had to do is he had to do a little bit of sleight of hand, because in order to paint this picture of the individual being the creative genius, he had to say, well, all the mentors didn't exist. All the patrons didn't exist. All the people, if you look at, you know, Da Vinci's workshop, he had 100 people or something working for him, doing all the different tasks involved in a workshop. So he had to kind of paint those out. But unfortunately, that's the way that a lot of us people think about what creativity is these ideas, these creative geniuses. But actually, I would argue more that we're vessels for a creative, you know, genius, which is all around us. And we're just channeling it in different ways at different points. So if you ask most people around the world, do you consider yourself creative? Depending on where you are in the world, you'll get a different response. So if you're in North America, it'll be about 55% will consider themselves creative. If you're in the UK, where I am today, 45%. If you're in places like South Korea, it's very, very low, like I think like 30% or something as well. So it's very different depending on where you are. But if you ask the second question, okay, is creativity important for your job and the work that you do? It's like 80% of them people will say yes. So people do realize it's important. It's just that many people don't necessarily consider themselves creative.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And it's fun because I haven't actually looked at creativity so in such detail. So I find this a very great topic. And now you talked about importance. So why is it so important to be creative, do you think?
Well, I think it's always been important to be creative because many of the creative people, they give us the new ideas, whether that's in business or the arts or in the sciences. But actually, it's become even more important now. Creativity has gone from the 10th most important job skill to the 3rd most important job skill by 2020. That's where it's going. Now, the reason that creativity is going to become the 3rd most important job skill is artificial intelligence, automation, robots. Frankly, they're going to take 40% of existing jobs over the next 20 years. Many of the jobs that we know today will be gone. Robots, AI, they're taking those jobs. And what that requires, and many of those are kind of more, you know, simple routine types of tasks, but some of them not, you know, kind of higher level tasks as well. But the things that as humans we are uniquely capable of and uniquely brilliant at is creativity, coming forward with ideas, with strategies, seeing connections between different things. And I think one of the reasons why a lot of people get a bit freaked out by the idea of, okay, so creativity is going to become really important, but I still don't consider myself creative. Here in the West, we often think about creativity being, it has to be this brand new idea that's never been invented yet. And that's because many people in the West come from a Christian or Judaic background with the idea the world was created in 7 days, for example. It's like this sudden thing that's happened. That's in the rest of the world, that's not the way that it's necessarily considered. If you go to the East, for example, creativity is often thought of as where you have two existing ideas that you bring together in a new and novel way. And if you think about creativity like that, it kind of takes some of the pressure off, because anyone can take, maybe they're an expert in one particular field. Maybe they're an expert in leadership, for example, but they're really into evolutionary biology, or they're really into artificial intelligence, or they're really into art. And they can see how those things, well, what if I take an idea from that area and an idea from this area and I combine them together and it creates an entirely new thing? So I think that's where, as humans, we're brilliant at doing is we're very interested. We're just curious life forms. So we want to take ideas from different places. So that's why it's important. And that's why I think it's going to become even more important, because frankly, AI, automation, robots are going to take so many of those jobs. And it's why today, if there was a big study done by one of the big consulting companies that found amongst senior leadership, like the C-suite of companies, they say that creativity is one of the top 10 most important strategic things for their organization. So you're just seeing that general rise of creativity just now.
Yeah, I think that things are actually changing now and people are starting to look at everything differently because we have to. And now how do you think that, for example, a business owner or a manager can actually empower their staff to be more creative?
There's so many different ways. I mean, we can talk about kind of top tips in a minute, but one of the ones I often think about is if I'm speaking to a leader of a company and I speak about creativity, and they say, oh, yeah, we, you know, we're a really kind of creative company. We have brainstorming sessions all the time. And I go, that's great. You know, brainstorming to the 1950s and the foundations of it is really good. And then I ask them to explain, you know, the, how they do their brainstorming or their ideation, ideation sessions. And unfortunately, many brainstorming sessions just don't work. They're kind of waste of time. The way it's not that the people in the sessions are not, you know, potentially brilliant at what they're doing. It's just that they've been set up to fail with it. So the most common one that you see why so many brainstorming sessions in or ideation sessions in organizations fail is someone will say, okay, everyone at 3 o'clock we're meeting and we need to come up with an idea for this new thing, and they. And or they might not even say what the thing, what the why they're coming in for the ideation. They'll just kind of put everyone in the room, and unfortunately, you'll have one person will have the, you know, maybe some the post-it notes, and one person will have the whiteboard pen, and it's usually a man, and they usually end up dominating the board with their ideas, and so no one else gets a say. And I see it so many times. It's usually the alpha or the A type personality. And they dominate all the ideas. Now, the problem with that is manyfold. One is that if you're maybe an engineer, you're a quiet type of person, brainstorming sessions can often be horrible experiences because you are not that natural extroverted. You're an introvert. So what I often will say first and foremost is in an organization, if you're running any kind of brainstorming session or ideation session, tell everyone before they come into what the challenge is going to be, because for many introverts, they would prefer to be working on the idea quietly on their own first, and then come into the room with some of those ideas. Secondly, everyone should have pens. Everyone should have post-it notes. You know, because no one should dominate the board in that way. And that's why the role of the facilitators can be so powerful as well, because they're not there to dominate with their ideas. They're there to ensure that everyone in the room, you can pull the best ideas from everyone in the room. The second, if you don't have a facilitator, it can be really common that person that's running the session will just dominate the board with their ideas. And so you have to get really good at being able to give feedback, creative feedback, and holding back a little bit to get the best from other people. There's lots of different ways you can do that. You know, a very simple way is, especially if you're working with lots of engineers or more introverted people, or if you're in a country where maybe there's, because of hierarchy in organization, maybe the lower junior people don't want to necessarily come forward with their ideas in front of more senior people, or maybe there's a gender thing that's around that as well, then there's a thing called brain writing. And it's a great technique. Basically, everyone gets a piece of paper, and maybe for 2 minutes, they have to write their three ideas down quietly on their own. The paper gets passed around, and then after 2 minutes, the paper gets passed around. The next person that gets that piece of paper can either add to the idea on the paper, or they can add their own ideas, which they haven't said before. And that just goes around, and then someone takes and puts all these ideas up on the board, and then you start to have a discussion around them. And that way, it just kind of releases some of those ideas without someone having to verbally say what those things are. So that's just a very, very simple, just from Britain in terms of brainstorming and ideation, how organizations can take some of that genius that's in their people and kind of get it out there.
Yeah, I think that's great, because I mean, some people are shy and maybe reserved, and they don't want to. And so it's a wonderful way to get them forward and getting those ideas going. And I think also once you start reading the notes and other people's notes, it does spark other ideas because it can bring something. Excellent. So I love that. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
So now you talked about some top tips. So can you give us some top tips on how to be creative?
Yeah, so it's a good thing is, even if you don't consider yourself particularly creative, creativity is a skill. It's a skill that can be developed, like learning French or learning to paint or any kind of skill. It's a learned skill. So I think a really useful framework is this, what we call the five steps or five stages of the creative process. And what you essentially look to do is, over time, you look to develop each of those stages for yourself. And also with your team in a larger context. So let me take you through these five steps or stages. The first step is what we call the preparation stage. This is the stage where you're just looking to absorb as much information as possible. You're not looking to come up with new ideas at this stage. So pressure's off. You're just looking to absorb. So if you're a writer, let's say you're writing a new book, that's the stage you're doing all your research, or you're maybe going to the place that you're thinking about writing about and looking around and walking around, getting the feel of the place, noting all the little details. If you're a visual artist, maybe you're looking at the artwork of other visual artists to get ideas. If you're an entrepreneur, you're looking at maybe the work, how other entrepreneurs have built their businesses, different business models, and you're absorbing all this information. Now, at this preparation stage, the best place to be doing it is kind of a quiet environment, just so you can focus. That's really what it's about. It's just absorbing as much information as possible. Then we move to a stage. Often people will try and go from preparation immediately to coming up with ideas. The brain doesn't really work like that. So you need to give yourself a little bit of time to let the brain do what it does brilliantly, which is the sorting and the sifting and putting stuff to the back of your mind, your subconscious, so it can find some of the patterns. So we call this the, you know, the incubation stage. And at this incubation stage, you're often best to go and do something completely different. So if you're working on this, maybe go and work on another project for 2 weeks, for example, or if you go on holiday, go somewhere else, and ideally get into a different environment from where you've been doing the preparation stage as well. You just want to kind of separate yourself out. Believe me, your brain's going to be doing all the work in the background anyway. You don't have to worry about that. But you just give yourself a little bit of that time, that incubation time. And then we move on to the next stage, this insight stage, often like the aha moment or the eureka moment. Now, in reality, this is probably the shorter stage, the smallest stage. It's the stage where we suddenly I've got the idea. Now, there's a couple of strange things around this stage. It's not possible really to have those insights without having done the previous stages. You need to have done all that preparation. You need to have loaded all that information in. You need to have give a little bit of time for you to kind of think about it. There's also really cool things about how you can encourage those insights. I don't know if you've ever felt this, but I mean, I get some of my best ideas in the shower in the morning, you know, or just when I'm waking up in the morning, that kind of time when you're kind of half awake, half asleep. Do you experience that as well? Do you get some of your best ideas at that time?
No, definitely. It's when you're not actually thinking about anything, you're doing something that's just habit and easy, and then, right.
Exactly. So what's going on there is usually you've been thinking about a challenge or problem, and you've let it kind of incubate, essentially. And when you get up in the morning, your brain is in that funny stage where it's not fully kicked in the bit of the brain that says, that's a stupid idea. It's not that bit's not quite awake yet. So at that point, you're waking up, your ideas, you're open to unconventional ideas, which is really important. So you're not yet in that conventional stage, you're open to unconventional ideas. And the brain is essentially, in a very short point, you've got these alpha waves rippling through your brain as well. And it suddenly just kind of comes to you, you know, those ideas just kind of come to you like that as well. Another really fascinating thing before was, you know, actually what you can do what's called creativity hacking. And this is a way of encouraging ideas to come through. You know, a great way of doing that in order to be able to calm your mind, to be able to find these things, is some form of mindfulness practice. And that could be in the form of, you know, some meditation, or it could be in yoga, or it could be something that allows your mind just to quiet a little bit, to kind of quiet the waves so you can see to the bottom. You can see what's down
there. Use laughter, actually, which is a great way.
Exactly. It is a perfect example. So it's something, it's a form of release, I guess is one thing that's going on. And it's also tapping into some, just a really core part of you as a human. And it kind of cuts away all of that noise and cuts away all of that artifice that we often build around ourselves as people as well. And that's why laughter is great, mindfulness is great, yoga, you know, that's why that's so powerful. Another interesting thing is around what you eat and drink. So this is a bizarre one, but there's a neuroscience professor, there you go, at University of Pennsylvania called Professor Martha Farrar. She did a really fascinating study about caffeine and creativity. And what she found was that high levels of caffeine make you much less likely to come up with insights, that middle stage. So if you're having high levels of caffeine, the chances of you coming up with that idea is actually reduced. So you want to be reducing when you're kind of at that stage of your project, you're looking for those ideas, whether it's for that new business or that play that you're writing or whatever the thing is, dial down on the caffeine levels. Now, that's not to say that caffeine is bad, because caffeine is actually very useful, she's found, at the first stage, the preparation stage, and the last stage, which I'll be talking about as well. So it's just that at that middle stage, when you're looking to come up with those insights or ideas, you want to dial down the caffeine, because caffeine's really good at getting us in and getting us focused. But that, you know, that, that convergent style of thinking. But what you need to do, I mean, also you need to have divergent thinking and be thinking much more openly. So you have your ideas are coming down. Always have some kind of journal, some way of being able to quickly write down. It could be on your phone, like your notes on your phone, or just having some way, because so many people come up with these ideas and then they think, oh yeah, I'll remember that. And then they forget it. So have some way that you can, on a regular basis, you can kind of go through those ideas and assess them. Because the next stage is that evaluation stage. This is actually the bit I personally find really challenging. I know many creative people find really challenging. It's and essentially that stage where you say, of all these ideas I've had, which one do I want to pursue? Mm-hmm. Now, it's going to be different for everyone. I would suggest you have some way of having some way of prioritizing these different ideas. That for me, that is based upon my mission and my values, and that's how I prioritize these ideas. For other people, if an organization, for example, you may have a more complex, you may have a ratings, you know, we have these five different ideas that we've generated for doing this. Which ones are we going to take forward? Maybe that one's easy. This one here has got a level of 1 to 10 is easier to implement. This one has got a higher level of profitability. This one has got, so you need to find some way of discerning for yourself or your team, which one is an idea you want to pursue. So that's that kind of evaluation stage. Also very important, if you're just on your own as a creative, this is the stage that you're wanting to be able to reach out to your mastermind or groups of people and just kind of have conversations, people for coffee. I was listening to some comedians the other day and actually it was some film directors. They say one of the first things they do is when they're at that stage, got those ideas, they'll pick up the phone to some friends, say, hey, I've got this idea for a film, and they'll just describe it, and they'll almost in the silence, they'll know if it's a good idea, if the person is reacting to it or not. So you know, find your small tribe of people you trust, and ideally don't just have one person, don't have necessarily one mentor. You maybe want to have three people who you can triangulate their information because it can kind of be coming at it from different perspectives. And in the final stage, the fifth stage, is just that elaboration stage, creating the thing. So that could be creating the minimum viable product, writing that, you know, getting that first drafts and improving things that way. And then you can go back to the, often to the start again as well. So that's the five stages. So we just recap, we have the preparation stage, we have the incubation stage, we have the insight stage, we have the evaluation stage, and then we have the elaboration stage. And the more that you can become better at each of these stages and develop your skills at each of these stages, the more creative you're going to be.
Wow, that's a lot of information. But you know what I really liked is when you talk about speaking to your tribe or to your people or your mastermind, are there any tips about that? Because I know that sometimes when people, because I've got a variety of friends, of different ideas, and they maybe not seeing, they're not able to see what I'm thinking. And they might jump and put me down or put the idea down. What do you suggest about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's different in organizations. There's, I mean, I speak about this and I train about this in terms of how to give creative feedback. So first of all, when if you're in a team context, if you want to do any kind of training around this, a great example is a company like Pixar. And when Pixar is doing its morning, they're looking through the rushes of the previous day and they're giving feedback to everyone. They will never say that scene is rubbish or that scene just doesn't make sense. They will say something. They'll you want to be specific about what you do as well. And so they'll say something like that scene lacks pace, lacks the pace of the previous scene because X, Y, Z. And so you kind of want to be a little bit more specific when you give that feedback rather than say that just doesn't work for me. So the problem is sometimes going to people who don't have that, you know, haven't given feedback in that kind of way, they can cause you to kind of crunch down your idea before it's even had a chance to fully get started. And you can see this also with managers as well. Unfortunately, sometimes managers will, someone will come to them with an idea and they will say either, oh, that idea doesn't, you know, I really don't think that's going to work without having a chance for that person to fully develop that idea. So, you know, if you're that type A personality, just try and hold back a little bit. Try and do things like they do with doing when I worked in Silicon Valley. It was always and how can you add to the idea? Oh, that's an interesting idea. But what about if you did that and this and that? So try and be additive in your thinking. Now, when you're just talking to general friends and or family members, it's a little bit more challenging because they often want to, they don't want to say things, something that they're going to feel that they're going to hurt you as well. So they can sometimes hold back when you actually don't want them necessarily to hold back. So I would usually caution, I would usually think when it's an idea related to building something around your business or your thought leadership, I would try and find a smaller group, maybe a group of six, as a build your own little mastermind. People that you can be absolutely honest with, but also people that care for each other and feel invested in your success as well. And then you kind of have to do a little bit of triangulation. You have to say, okay, you know, I'm hearing that multiple times and I'm hearing that from there, but actually it's fine to say, I don't agree with that person on that. You know, frankly, if all we ever did was just follow what people thought we should do, then nothing new would ever be created because it's impossible for other people to see what's in your mind. But you just need to be, I think that often when the best stage of that is sometimes when you go somewhere, you've already kind of fleshed out pretty much the core of the idea and you're really going to them with like, okay, I've got these ideas and I'm thinking about taking these, I could take it these three different ways. What do you think about it? That's a different kind of conversation from like, I have this idea.
Yeah, no, that's definitely it, because I know that sometimes, you know, sometimes they don't get it or something, or they want to be nice and they say, oh, great idea, when they didn't give you. So that, I think that's a very valuable point. Now, you know, with me talking about happiness a lot, I want to know, how can, you know, happiness influence creativity?
So here's the uncomfortable thing, and I don't think people really talk about this, I've had a good opportunity. I've worked with lots of award-winning creatives in various different fields. And I would say of the top creatives I've seen, the people, the award winners, maybe 20% of them I would class as being happy people as well. So often when we think, oh, someone's really creative, they're really happy. They are not the same thing at all. It's like saying someone that's financially successful, they must be happy. It's just, they're just not the same thing. I think you have to think about them as, I think they can be integrated into the whole, they are integrated into the whole person, but you have to be making decisions sometimes creatively. And I see this, some of my friends who I say that are the most happy about the most creative, and the most creative, they've kind of set their life up to win for themselves every day. And probably the prime one I would say about that is comparison, is not comparing themselves to others in that way. Because I think that's a really, especially with social media, it's a really dangerous thing to do. And you have to either have a huge amount of self-confidence, or you just have to find some way of just saying, listen, I'm doing my own thing. And I think personally, a good way for creatives to think about this, you mentioned the word tribe earlier, is rather than put yourself as competitive against all these different people, just say, all I want to do is I want to build a tribe of 1,000 people, my super fans, who want to buy and absorb everything that I do, everything that I create. Now, we're in a world of like 7 billion people or something. So when you break it down to, like, I just need 1,000 people, it makes it feel less competitive in that way. And it just allows you to really focus on serving people rather than necessarily, oh, that person seems to be doing really well over there, because they're playing a completely different game. I mean, it's like people, I see this all the time in the entrepreneurial space, people that talk to me about, oh, I'm doing hustling. And I'm like, God, that sounds awful. You know? And they say, but you know, I'm going to be more successful than you because I'm constantly hustling. And I'm like, well, you know, maybe it depends how you define success. I just don't define success that way. That's not fair. I'm playing a completely different game from you in that way. So I think you have to get certain on what does creative happiness look like for you. Trying to get clear on that and your own values and just steering yourself on that. And it will mean that at certain points you might get offered a creative project, and you may go, actually, I don't want to do that project because that's going to take me away from my family for 3 months. And actually they make me happier doing that. Or I don't want to completely fill my calendar with all these things, because I know what makes me happier is having that space just to be able to go and have a coffee and sit and daydream and things as well. You have to set the game up to win for yourself. You cannot, no one else can give you can any guidance on that. So I would say be careful of comparison and just be get as clear as you can what makes you happy when you're doing kind of creative, how your creative work. And that could just be like, just write down, when am I at my most happiest creatively? What is going on? When am I at my least happiest creatively? Write those down and just try and figure out, you know, every day, am I doing those things? And it, and the, what you'll probably find is those things that make you happiest creatively don't really cost very much. You know, it's just, it's kind of simple things, but you just need to schedule in and build your day around those things.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, we are, like you said, we are all different, and what makes one happy doesn't make another one happy. So it's very individual, and I think it's really important. So now with creativity, can it help a company or a person be more productive?
Absolutely. I mean, we think about, when productivity, we're talking about we talk about GDP, you know, the output of someone, you know, how many dollars are coming in per hour spent. Now, here's the thing about being creative. It's difficult to be creative. And I'll give you an example of this. You know, there's the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule, which many people will know about. So basically, 20% of the things you do will deliver 80% of the results. Now, if you look at all the things that you do and you think, okay, how can I creatively think about, like, what is those 20%? How can I creatively get more of that in my life and be doing more of that work? That requires a bit of a creative jump, probably not a massive creative jump, but thinking about that. But what a lot of people don't speak about is actually the 80-20 rule is fractal, which means that actually 4% of things that you do will deliver 64% of the results. Now, when you boil it down to that, what 4% of the things that I do, if I just did these 4% of things, I'm doing all these different things, if I just did that 4%, they would deliver 64% of the results. You have to get really creative in thinking about that, because it requires that you cut away a lot of things, like, and it might not necessarily you cut them, but you say, okay, I need to think creatively how I can get either, I can outsource that work or how I can streamline that work. I'm working a project just now, and I sat and did this. I looked at this about a month ago, and actually, I mean, it brings in money and people really enjoy it, but it's not in that 4% of things for me. So, but at the same time, it's kind of useful. So I'm having to think about how can I streamline that thing so it just doesn't require my time. And I have to get really creative about thinking about that. So that's how it kind of comes back to kind of productivity. And whether you're like a big engineering firm and you're thinking about how to, you know, cut costs or develop, break into new markets, or if you're a speaker, you're a professional speaker, and you're thinking, how can I, you know, I'm at this stage, and I need to kind of get to this stage. I mean, this is what I did as I kind of, for my own, when I wanted to get involved in the world of speaking, I saw these people doing all these different things in speaking. And I said, I can't compete in that way. I can't write a best-selling book. Or maybe hopefully at some point I'm going to write a best-selling book, but I'm not going to write a best-selling book between now and the end of the year. So I had to think really creatively about how can I develop my authority in the space very quickly? How can I build a tribe? And how can I learn from other great speakers? When I don't particularly like going to conferences that much, to attend conferences. I find about speaking, I don't like attending many conferences. So I'm a kind of a little bit of an introvert in that sense. So I've decided to create one of these online summits. And that's how the online summit kind of thing started. And that was just a creative approach to doing something, because I know no one else was really doing that in my space. And it's worked out really well for me.
Yeah, well, I know, because I love it, and that's what got, I was hooked. I think for about, I bought the course, so I had access to it all the time, but I couldn't stop. It was just like, watch. So it was great, so I love it. You know, you mentioned earlier about AI and about technology, and we've got all these smart cities. Now, how can creativity, you know, play a role in the happiness with this AI and smart world?
Yeah, so I mean, I think a lot of people are really worried about AI. I think if you ask most leaders in organizations, 80% of them will say AI is fundamentally going to change my industry. If you ask most people in organizations how they feel about AI, 36% are going to say, I'm really worried about it because I'm worried it's going to replace me, it's going to replace my job. Now, That is true. Many jobs will go. We know that, you know, 20%, 40% of jobs are likely to disappear over the next 20 years because of AI. That was University of Oxford did a big study on that. But I actually think the more interesting thing is there's going to be lots of new jobs, types of jobs being created and things that we can't even imagine yet. I know I employ people who their job didn't exist 3 years ago because like Facebook advertising manager, that didn't exist really for me 5 years ago. So one of the things I think we have to start thinking about is it's often been human against computer. And that's because we're kind of hardwired to think like this robot, like Terminator movie. But the way it's really good, and you can work like Gary Kasparov, one of the famous people beaten by a machine chess player, or beaten by IBM's one of the supercomputers. And you look at chess now, it was for a while, it was humans, so it's a computer, humans on top, AI computers beat humans. Really, the ones that work best now and that have the belt are human and AI working together. They will be human AI, will be an AI on its own, or will be a human on its own pretty much every day of the week. So centaurs, coming from, you know, the half man, half beast, mythical characters from ancient Greece. So we think about ourselves, we have to kind of start thinking about ourselves a little bit like centaurs, in that we're going to have to find ways to integrate with AI, to be able to use AI like a tool, like an extension of ourselves. I was a drummer originally, so my drumsticks felt like they were an extension of me. It was my ideas, but they were helping me get my ideas out there. So I think where we're starting to move towards now is this idea of AI as actually being an incredible enabler of new creative things that are coming out. Because AI is amazing at doing some of the more routine tasks, but it's also actually getting very good at doing like theorem proving and higher level tasks. And I actually, and this is maybe controversial, but I believe that you're going to start seeing real creative AI just on its own. Now, does that mean it's going to replace us as human creativity? No, because I think the best things you're going to find are with when humans collaborate with AI and machines, and it's just brilliant. You know, it's like the Picasso working with his paintings. They're tools for them to express the idea. So that's where I think it's going. Are we there yet? No, we're not there yet. The stage we're at just now is it still humans are kind of worried because these machines are taking our jobs. And so I would encourage anyone, just get curious about AI because it's going to affect everyone. So maybe go and take one of these free online courses. There's loads of free online courses around AI. Just kind of start to get to learn. And then think about, you know, what is it in your job? I know a friend of mine who's a film editor, video editor, and they're now using AI to create the trailers for movies. So they basically input all the video footage, all the footage from the film, and the AI will essentially create that great 3-minute trailer, including the voiceover, and the human hasn't been involved there. Now, the good thing is, frankly, trailers are not that particularly creative to create on movies. That's not the thing. The core thing is the storytelling within the main movie. So that allows those editors time to focus on the main movie and the main thing that they're creating. So there's loads of ways. Think about it for your own job, your own role. How could I mean, I'm seeing AI coaches now in healthcare. I'm seeing AI coaches within business coaching as well. So they're kind of starting off things like chatbots and kind of going further on as well. I'm seeing AI hologram speakers now starting. So that's one way. I was talking with someone the other day and I might be doing something there around where they essentially film me and film lots of versions of me giving a talk. And depending on how the audience is reacting, it will have me do a different part of my talk, essentially, with the hologram of me on stage. Now, when you're in a world of 7 billion people, I cannot physically speak to 7 billion people. The only way I can do that is through online, through things like holograms, where people can take my hologram and show it if they're at an event in Shanghai or some place in the middle of nowhere in Eastern Europe, for example. So it's really exciting, I think. If you're a thought leader, it's a really exciting time because these are just new tools for you to do it.
Yeah, no, I'm excited about it. I think that there's going to be lots to do, and that's wonderful. Now, what else are you working on at the moment?
So working on a couple of things, the main thing I'm really just working on is my keynotes. I'm doing a lot of speaking just now all over different parts of the world on either creativity or artificial intelligence. So that's kind of my main focus at the moment. I'm starting to think about my next summits. You know, I've done now four online summits. And I'm now starting to think what the next one would be and how to continually improve these online summits I've done in the past. I've done ones for speakers, professional speakers, International Speaker Summit. I've done ones for Creative Life Summit. I've done ones for guitar players because I have a business involving guitars, so Online Guitar Summit. I've done ones for event professionals called Event Professional Summit, bringing some of the world's best event professionals together. So I'm now thinking, like, what's next? And probably what I'll do is, the reason I do these online summits, the reason I love doing them is primarily from a learning perspective. I get to talk to really interesting people, learn things, and I get to share that learning with other people. Yes, you know, they end up making money and building authority and generating leads and all that good stuff. But primarily it's about learning for me and and serving the people that I'm looking to serve as well. So those are the kind of things that I'm working on just now. And if anyone out there maybe have an event coming up and they're looking for that speaker to come and speak at their event or to do a special training thing that they want to do, I'm always happy. I always love just kind of getting out on the road and meeting new people.
Yeah, no, it's great. And I know from, you know, doing just, this is my first one, sorry, but I'm learning so much. And it's a topic that I actually am quite familiar with. So for me to suddenly go, wow, and because I'm doing my research and I'm like, wow, it's just such a big world out there. So I think it's really good. And that's technology. So yay.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So yeah. And I know that you got a wonderful gift for us. What is that gift?
So if anyone wants to learn more about creativity, how to develop their own creativity or the creativity of their people, I have a great 3-part video series, which talks about, you know, things like the brainstorming stuff, goes a bit more in depth than that, you know, on the creative process, some of the creativity hacking things as well. So I know we're going to have a link here. People, it's absolutely free. People go through that. It's really in depth, that 3-part video series, and hopefully people find value in it.
That's wonderful. James, thanks so much for taking the time and giving us so much value. It's really interesting. You've given us actually so much to think about. So I love that. And we will put a link to your site so that everybody can find you if they need to find out more. I know that you got loads on your site, so it's very informative. So thank you very much for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you. And I hope everyone kind of goes out there and works on some really cool creative things this week.
Yay. Ciao.